the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit. Oh.
My name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I'll come in here. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
Going well.
Excellent, excellent. So tonight, for folks who are curious, is April Fool's Day 2021 that we're recording this. For folks who are curious, because sometimes these episodes do not come out immediately. Sometimes it takes a month or so to come out because we put them all in the queue and release them as is. And some of our listeners, like Pam, always are curious, and that's why we're letting folks know. So who we are, for folks who are here, let's see. So if you have stumbled upon us, we are Dark Discussions podcast, part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is a all-genre website. So sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, foreign films, cult films, drive-in films, and the like. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. The network itself is a place that has columns, reviews, release notices, articles, podcasts, over 30, and Dark Discussions podcast is the flagship podcast because it was the very first on the network, and it was named after the network. But if you're interested, there's another 29-plus different podcasts that you can listen to. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Dark Discussion 1. You can go to Facebook and follow us on the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. And also, you can Basically, email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or email us on the Contact Us form, which is on darkdiscussions.com. Speaking of two things tonight, we do have one Twitter email that I will read. And then we also have today a Patreon pick, Mike. So you're going to get up the little counter thing there.
Okay.
All right. So as Mike's doing that, I'll explain what Patreon is. Patreon, we have a link on every page of darkdiscussions.com to Patreon. Basically, Patreon is a place you can donate to the podcast because the podcast is all free. We don't have any subscription fees or anything of that nature, but we do have a few hundred dollars of bills. We are actually adding some stuff this month, including a Zoom. So we can do interviews with people without having the time run out. So we're getting a yearly subscription for that. That costs another $100 and something. So anybody can donate to Patreon, that would be greatly appreciated. And if you do donate to Patreon, there's at least something that we can do back besides giving all this free content. One thing we do is that you can choose the topic for Dark Discussions to basically review and critique. So, for example, for every $5 that you donate to the podcast, you'd be able to choose an episode for us to do. So, for example, if you donate $15, you could choose the Teresa Russell film Black Widow, the Emily Blunt film The Adjustment Bureau, and some random films such as Abominable, the Bigfoot movie. Or you could just choose Abominable three times because you did donate $15. After each quarter, we randomly pick out of the hat a film from all our Patreon supporters, and we will do an episode on that movie. So, Mike, do you have the Patreon, or I should say the randomizer, up by chance?
I'm getting it up. I'm having some...
No worries while you're doing that.
Interesting issue. What's the high number going to be?
Well, that's what I'm going to get right now. Basically what we got is Patreon. We have, you put on 425, Mike, 425. And while that's going up, I'm going to get the Twitter email for because it was a email for our 10th anniversary episode. And this is what it has to say. First off, the episode, the episode was about aliens, and it was our 10th anniversary. Basically, March 9th, 2011 was when Dark Discussions News Network was formed, and 10 years later, March 9th, 2021. And this is what we have to say. John Appleby from the other side of the pond in the UK writes to us, and he says, Dark Discussions crew, congratulations on your 10th year. My daughter was 11 when you began. Now she's left home. Thank the fuck. Keep up the excellent work, and thank you so much, Phil, Mike, Eric, Abe, Chrissy, and the crew. I hope you and the family are good after the loss of your father, Phil, yet you still carried on. You are a legend. Thank you, guys, and keep up the good work. All right. Thank you, John Appleby from the UK. He's also on Facebook, too. I know he's there, but he's very active on Twitter. So appreciate the kudos for 10 years. Crazy. All right. So, Mike, do we got anything there?
Yeah, I'm ready. Ready when you are.
Anyway, sounds good. But, yeah, that's amazing. His daughter was 11 years old, and now his daughter's 21 and out of the house. That's how long we've been. That's nuts.
Fucking insane.
It is. All right, Mike. So 425, and then you press the random button.
All right, here we go. .407
is from Michelle Barkley, a listener from Pennsylvania, and it is the semi-slasher, modern slasher, Ride, R-Y-D-E, R-Y-D-E. So Ride is a Uber company, and it's basically about an Uber company named Ride. So, yes. All right, sounds good. Actually, let me get the wiki for that. I've actually seen the film, and I actually bought the Blu-ray of it. It's a pretty good indie horror film. And it says, technology brings us closer, or perhaps it brings strangers a little too close. But how much can you really trust someone? With a new ride share service, you never know who you'll be getting in a car with, or if you'll ever get out. So it's takes place in, I think, Los Angeles, 2017 crime horror thriller. It's got some good exploitation elements, some good kills, and whatnot. So that's the one added to the list. We also have Something Wicked This Way Come and Rocky Horror Picture Show that we're going to get to shortly. All right. Anything anybody wanted to bring up before we get into any further things? Am I speaking to people? Are people here?
Nothing to say.
I don't have anything either.
All right, very well. All right, so I think we can probably get into our topic tonight. So, Mike, what are we going to discuss tonight?
We are watching the Shudder exclusive Killer Jeans movie Slacks, which feels appropriate for April Fool's Day.
Yeah, you're right.
Ready.
Hi there. And you are?
Libby.
You are here for the new collection turnaround. This is such an important night for us.
A lot of people have been very keen to get their eyes on it.
Jeans that automatically adapt to your body size. The Super Shapers!
Lockdown activated.
I want you to know I will do whatever it takes to make sure things go as scheduled.
Oh my god. I'm so, like, totally excited I could just die. Should we call the police?
We can't. We're in lockdown.
What if there's a killer out there?
Are you afraid there's a killer out there?
Yeah.
Get ready. For Slacks.
Okay, so we know two things. It loves Bollywood music, and it has a bindi on its forehead.
Slacks.
Small price to pay for an awesome ass.
That's right. Slacks, 2020 film, technically, when it did the festival circuit, but or whatever festival circuit there was, but it's been released 2021 everywhere. It's a Canadian film, and the film, as Mike mentioned, is getting some notice on Shudder, because Shudder is similar to Netflix. When they get a new film, they put it right on top and try to get people to watch it. The film was released earlier this month, or I should say March. It's a short film of 77 minutes. The film was directed by a woman named Elsa Kefart, who has done numerous horror comedy films in the past. She was one of the co-writers with someone named Patricia Gomez. The film stars all unknowns, at least in the United States. The film is getting excellent reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. There's like about 50 or so reviews, and it's getting about 97% good reviews out of 59. But the audience score is 41%, over with around 50 reviews as well. So this is continuing in the way we've been noticing, especially on various podcasts, that side podcasts where me and Barrett have been discussing, such as the Stand podcast and the Halloween Boutique podcast, and then what the podcast that me, Mike, and Barrett did called about Lovecraft Country, where we've talked about the discrepancy between critics and audience is getting worse and worse as years have gone by since our 10th year anniversary.
They've always been there. Always been.
Yeah, you're right. But now,
I mean, critics didn't love Rambo, and audiences did.
That's,
you know,
true.
That's just off the top of my head.
But it's more the reversal, is what I'm interested in, where people seem to be not liking stuff and the critics are liking it even more.
Well, that's also always been. Like, you can go and sure and find tons of critic darlings, you know, that the average audience goer, you know, wouldn't have been interested in. My Dinner with Andre, I don't think was a huge box office success. You know, I imagine a lot of people, if they had gone to see that, would have been bored to tears.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know what it is? I guess I used to align closer to critics than audiences, and now I've noticed that I've now aligned with the audiences, so I've even become alienated with the critics. So I guess that's what it is. It's my perspective is that I've always was,
I guess,
pretty close to the critics, but not anymore.
For me, it's like, the critical darlings, it was usually like the high literature, you know, it's the same way for me, but I've never seen it where it's like a horror movie would do that. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. It just seems a little odd to me.
Well, I think part of it is the nature of certain horror films. And I do not mean to put Slacks in this category. But films like The Witch and Hereditary or Midsommar.
Yeah.
The Babadook, stuff like that, where, you know,
It Follows.
It Follows, right? The quote unquote.
It Comes at Night.
I don't think It Comes at Night goes there, but I'm saying that I don't think It Comes at Night is considered elevated horror, what has been called elevated horror, which, you know, makes most of us here on the podcast roll our eyes at the comment. Nevertheless, we understand that that is what is meant by that term. And people, that's when they go see a horror movie, they want to go see Freddy or Chucky or Jason or The Conjuring or whatever it may be. And so it's a very different sort of thing. Saw. I'm not saying either one is wrong. It's two groups of people going to look for two different things, and they're in the mood for two different things. So, we've got right now, Godzilla versus Kong has come out. I have no idea what it's doing.
I watched it.
It's getting good reviews by critics. Let me see. Exactly. It's getting 79% good reviews by critics and 95% good reviews by audiences.
Right. So there's a split there, but not a huge split. But there's certain people like that are just not going to be interested in Godzilla versus Kong.
That's the truth.
Right?
My wife.
and people who are interested in it, they're interested in basically the title of the film. They want to see Godzilla. And they want to see Kong, and they want to see Versus.
Yep.
Everything else is secondary to all of that, you know. And anybody going to look for more than that is going to be disappointed, almost certainly. You're not going to watch Kong if you're looking for a romantic comedy.
Well, it's also as I mentioned, I think it was on the Stan podcast, Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, the Stan podcast that just wrapped up a month or so ago. That podcast, me and Barrett were talking, and I brought up the fact, and I've said it a few times elsewhere too, but I brought it up then first, that critics are now rating films based off of their personal belief system rather than whether or not a film's good or not.
Well,
the fans aren't doing that, but go on, Mike.
Well, I don't think that's the case either, because I think there are plenty of fans who like films based on what their personal belief system is.
That's probably true.
I think that it's, and this is a thing that's I noticed in the last 10 years where
our 10th year anniversary.
I've noticed film critics will start a review with lauding a film for whatever, validating whatever their belief system is. Right. Not saying I like this is a good movie. The direction is good. The story is good. Blah, 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 blah. And I like the fact that it has a diverse cast. It would start out with what a great movie this is because it has a diverse cast. And now they may be enjoying it for that reason. Now, and I am not someone to take away from someone. If that's why you enjoy the movie, OK, it seems like a weird reason to enjoy it. It sounds like it's a nice thing if you can get it. It's gravy on top. But, you know, I want the fundamentals to be there first. And also, going to what is the message of the film, what is the theme of the film, and basically, it's if you agree with the film, then they're enjoying the film, and it's turned into some measure of preaching to the choir. And if you're in the choir, That's reason enough to like the movie. And those are usually not movies that hold up well.
Yep, that's a fair point. And I think that's what I've noticed, I guess, in a lot of things recently. But either way, we'll get into all that stuff as we get further into our discussion of Slacks, which is its own distinct film. And again, we're just talking about what the critics said, not this film itself in this prior conversation. Now, before we get into anything about the film, I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with, I guess, me. I don't usually start, so I'll start. So I heard about this film because a couple of weeks ago we were looking for a film to talk about. And we landed up on Shudder and we were going through and there was a few of them there and this was one of them that popped up. I actually suggested it, cause I like the poster art. It looked pretty cool. And it seemed like it may be, somewhat humorous or interesting. Even though I'm not a horror fan, a horror comedy fan, I thought it would be maybe one of those better horror comedies. So that's how I heard about it. So we chose it and I watched it. I think it was last night. Yeah, last night. So I watched it last night and I was actually liking it a lot the first 15 minutes or so. And it was a pretty solid comedy. But then it goes downhill really quick at around the 25-minute mark. And then it goes really down the hill the last 20 minutes of the film, I felt. So I don't know a lot of the audience here. And I did not like this film at all. I thought it was terrible. Really bad. One of the worst films I think we're ever going to review on the podcast. And yet it has 97% good reviews out of 57 people on Rotten Tomatoes, but if Eric Webster was here, he goes, "Phil, stop using Rotten Tomatoes. They suck." And he's probably right. I hated this film. It was terrible. It was garbage. It will not be, it may be listed as my worst film of this year when we do our final wrap up of 2021. It was terrible. All right, let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, so I'm feeling I'll be the odd man out. I had fun with the film. It's a movie called Slacks about killer jeans. It is a silly film. It is a fun film. It is not a brilliant film by any means. It has sort of a thing to say in poking fun at faux woke culture and corporate culture. But that's really not the main thing. It's a 77-minute movie, so it kind of comes in and goes out. And even at that, it's a slight enough premise that it feels like it lasted longer than it needed to. They probably still could have cut out about 10 minutes and it would have been fine, but then it doesn't makes it harder to count as an actual film for film festivals and whatnot. I enjoyed the lead character, the lead actress. I thought some of the deaths were fine, were creative. I thought it was a good use of effects and it was silly. It's a very slight film. It is not a significant film. I don't know if it's a terribly memorable film outside the absurdity of the premise. But that's about it. That's what I have to say.
All right. Sounds good. Barrett?
So I had seen this advertised on Shudder. I hadn't watched it yet because I have so many streaming services and so many new things coming out to watch and old things to watch. But you had coaxed me into being on this episode, so I watched it earlier this week. After I watched it, I still wasn't sure about talking about it on the episode. So I watched it again today, and now I'm here to say that I really didn't like this film. I think the best thing that can be said about it is I think the main actress is a nice, fresh face, and I think she does a great job in the movie. I think it would have been better as not a horror film and as just what Mike was saying, you know, talking about wokeness and corporate culture and stuff like that. But other than that, it went downhill very quickly. And I just couldn't even take the evilness, the gene, seriously. So, this is just not a good film for me.
All right, sounds good. So, do we have a wiki, Barrett?
We do. Wiki. When a possessed pair of jeans begins to kill the staff of a trendy clothing store, it is up to Libby, an idealistic young sales clerk, to stop its bloody rampage.
All right, yeah, sounds about right. I'm good with that. IMDb or wiki or whatever you want to call it. Now, before we get into our spoilers, because, again, we don't just review, we critique and review. So we talk about everything and anything and specific scenes and whatnot. We'll throw that spoiler out in a little bit. But before that, we can discuss things that are general to the premise, the movie, this type of subgenre of horror or whatever. And I guess I'll start. I had a couple of things, or one main thing. And I think I had one problem with this film, which was the tonal shift, and it happens twice. Because the first 15 minutes, it's really good comedy. Then there's a scene where a body is found, and the reactions are so stupid that this became from a really highbrow, really good comedy to just like independent, stupid cinema comedy. And then it changes again, the tone, to kind of mean and vicious, and it doesn't even fit with the first half of the film. And it's not a comedy really anymore. And so as a result, I hated this film. And that was the main reason I hated the film. Now,
it's a horror comedy. It started out as a comedy and leans more into horror the further you go.
Yeah, but I mean, we can name, you know, Evil Dead and Zombievers if you prefer.
There's lots of ways to do a horror comedy.
But it was too many tonal shifts, I felt.
I didn't see it.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, because it amps up the horror as it goes into it, but it starts out without the horror, as most horror movies don't.
I felt the comedy type shifted as well.
Well, you get less comedy as it goes along because the body parts start mounting, and there's just a certain absurdity to the fact that it's people being killed by pants.
Well, I guess maybe you misunderstood my point. My point was is that you have a regular horror comedy or just a whatever type of comedy, the first minutes, and then, you know, people die, whatever, that's fine. But then when they find bodies, people, they should have had it like other horror comedies, people become scared and whatever, and it's still a comedy. But here, it became you have to literally leave your suspensions of disbelief and say, "Oh, all right, people really don't really care that these people are dead." I understand, but we have killer zombievers too, and the people didn't act like this.
Well, I didn't put this as good as that film, and it's not the same film. It's a movie about killer pants. There's only so much realism I'm expecting out of killer pants.
Zombievers. Though, too. I know. I'm just saying the tone. Right, I guess you don't understand what I'm saying. So
that's I understand. Good. I really don't see it as that different a tone. It's a silly film at the beginning. It's a silly film there. You know, it gets less silly a little later on in the film, but it's still kind of silly because it's about
apocalypse. Let's put it this way. The first 15 minutes was like The Office. All right. So it was funny. Okay. But you could see it actually happening and people being that ridiculous and hilarious. Then if someone died in the office, people wouldn't just suddenly still act ridiculous. You know, it was just weird. I don't know. I guess I can't explain it.
What didn't work for me was the actual animating force behind the pants. It brought me out of the film. And I couldn't take it seriously. Now, if those pants had had to be put on for them to kill somebody, I would have been okay with that. But the fact that they were totally self-animated, it totally ruined the movie for me. I don't know why, but it seemed ridiculous. And every scene I saw where they were like standing up on their own and stuff just was, I don't know, just seemed stupid to me.
that's a fair point, too, because originally the pants crawled or, you know, weren't like animated And then when they started doing the animation of the pants where they're walking around and stuff, yeah, that the CGI obviously it was a little weak because, again, this is an indie film and probably a smaller budget. So I could see that possibly being an issue for some folks, like, for example, you, Barrett.
Well, the CGI definitely gets bad. There's a scene where you get a whole bunch of pants in the dark, and I think to hide how bad some of the CGI is in that. I think some of it was done with wire work or puppetry, and I thought a lot of that was kind of clever and it worked well. But again, this is one of those things that it's if you either roll with it or you don't. You buy the premise, you buy the bit. And I have no question and that this is a thing that is going to push a lot of people's ability to suspend their disbelief.
Normally I can accept pretty much anything, but that, for some reason, it just didn't look real enough to me, and it just, it felt stupid. I don't know. When she had the pants on and the pants killed her, that I liked. I thought that was awesome. I was like, man, everybody that puts these pants on is going to die. That's cool.
But yeah, but I think they were trying to do something because it gets repetitive.
Yeah,
I know what they were trying to do. It just didn't work for me.
But you can't get right. So, I think they sat down and how much do you make use of your premise? And again, let's remember the premise is killer pants.
Yeah.
And what can you have the pants do?
Right.
To kill people that is fun, inventive, and playing with the premise. Right. If all they're doing is person after person putting on the same pair, the brand of pants, because it doesn't necessarily have to be that one pair of pants, and it just kind of squeezes them to death, I think it gets very boring and repetitive.
Well, I was when the influencer gets choked to death. I thought that was okay. That didn't take me out of it. It was more when they were like a unit of soldiers marching down the the hallway. That just, I don't know, that part was just That was it. That was like, oh, I can't handle this anymore.
That more than the Bollywood dancing?
That was pretty bad, too.
And that's a thing that it's leaning into it, and either you're going to laugh at it or you're not. And, I laughed at it, but I can easily see how people would hate it.
Yeah, those things bothered me. I mean, some of it was unexplained. It's like, why were there so many pairs of pants, because there's only one ghost, supposedly. At least that's what I thought. But the thing, that really bothered me.
I think there's more than one ghost, FYI. I think there was a bunch of them. They just showed one.
Okay. Well, it contaminates, her blood contaminates the crop, as I think where they're going.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
I think that was it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It wasn't really explained that well, I felt, because obviously all of us weren't quite sure, except you, Mike. You seem like you knew. But I guess my issue was when the comedy changed. Mike, you keep on saying that it shouldn't, but it did. That's the thing that bothered me. The moment they find,
I think it's the fact that you're going into the film for killer pants, so I'm expecting a level of absurdity in the film. I'm not expecting The Office.
Yeah, I expect a level of absurdity, too, and that I can accept. I just, the visualizations pulled me out of it. And, at the end of the movie, they do show the CG, them doing the CGI of the pants. It's kind of neat. I should get into the credits. I don't know if you guys watched that far, but...
I watched the entire credits, but I wasn't really paying attention. But I did watch the very last scene after the credits.
Where the guy comes out of the...
Yeah, that was actually kind of funny, because that was kind of the original humor, versus the over-the-top B-movie humor.
Oh, so I didn't. So there was a post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, but basically, remember when Hunter says, "Meet me in the bathroom in 5 minutes," to basically get to have sex with him.
Yeah.
And she never shows up. He's still waiting there, and he comes out at the end of the movie after the credits.
Longer than five minutes.
He's going, Hunter. He goes, Hunter, you there? It's been longer than 5 minutes. So he's in the can the entire time waiting for her.
And there's blood prints.
That's
outside.
Not the original humor, because it's been like a whole night. The guy wouldn't be waiting in the bathroom the entire night. That's still absurdism.
I know, but I guess you can't. I can't explain what I'm talking about then.
No, this is the Roger Ebert line where it's like where he said humor is like porn. You know, it either works for you, it doesn't. You know, you can't talk somebody into finding something funny or finding something sexy. You know, and it's either the humor works.
Well, you know what it is?
Doesn't work for you.
Is that our lead girl acted how I would expect it when she finds the body? The other guy shows up, and no matter what he says, I can't believe she would have gone along with it. And I think that's where I had the problem. She acted out of character at that point.
And that's because it was written in the script, not because she was doing a bad job acting.
Exactly.
Right,
she does a great job. That is probably the least plausible moment out of the entire thing. And this is again, a movie with killer pants dancing Bollywood numbers.
It is the least plausible moment. That is perfect.
Because like they find a body and it's not like they just found her dead.
She's crumpled up in pieces.
Yeah, right. So you can't even plausibly make the argument that she committed suicide, which is I think where they were going with that.
But you couldn't because she was ripped in half.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somehow the pants put her in there.
I just had an issue with that because the main character, and again, I'm not insulting any of the acting. The acting was great throughout. It was the problem I felt was the script and the tonal shifts and all that stuff. And that was one of the things I could buy in this movie, since the point was possessed pants. Fine, I got it. But when the main girl didn't follow her regular instinct throughout the first 20 minutes of the film, that's when I was like, this is ridiculous. And again, that may be no problem for other people, but for some reason it was a problem for me, and I don't know why. But either way,
well, the idea is that she's, you know, is that the for the audience is the manager of the store. You know, this is the launch party for, or the pre-launch of this brand new special gender inclusive pair of pants that shapes itself to your body. And the store is on lockdown for reasons the night before, which is again makes no real sense.
Well, so none of the pants get out. I could see that. That actually seemed plausible.
Well,
you would have the entire staff staying overnight.
Right, and if you did have the entire staff staying overnight, you would still have a security guard or someone there that would allow them to leave if they had to.
Well, every store that's not open 24 hours locks down at night. This was a massive security lockdown that no one's allowed to leave, which, you know, insurance purposes would never happen.
Sure.
Right?
Well, you know, it's Canada. Who knows what they do up there?
I'm sure that they wouldn't allow that there either. So there's that issue, but again, it's ridiculousness. It's killer pants. And he wants to use this. If his store performs well, it could launch his career. So I have no problem with him trying to hide the body or cover up the thing. It's certainly a thing we've seen in countless films before. I think that maybe it's not conveyed well. I don't know. I really didn't.
Right. And there's no way he would be able to. If he found it himself and he was that scumbag, I agree. But when other people found it and then he's told and then he does nothing about it, and that character is playing it pretty straight throughout the whole film and yet suddenly is like, oh, okay, I guess that's right. That's where I had the problem.
Yeah, but that's not going to ruin the entire film for me. It just isn't.
Okay, that literally was when it ruined for me, and I immediately texted Barrett. I said, "Yeah, this movie's so bad."
It didn't help for me. Didn't help for me. It just was one of the things that. Okay, so the marching pants and dancing pants brought me out of it a little bit, and that definitely pulled me out of it a little bit. And just from there, the script just didn't seem that great to me when I started adding all these things up that I just did not like.
Sure, and that's fair. All right, so let me do another little description of what's going on before we start talking further. Basically, Libby is a new hire of this boutique store. So, you know, think of something like The Gap or something of that nature, Express, whatever, Abercrombie, you know, whatever. And so she's hired that day, and then she finds out that day that she that there's going to be a new release of a new gene that is supposed to like be non-binary. So in other words, anybody can wear it.
Gender inclusive, I think, is the phrase they use.
Gotcha. Yeah. And it can fit anybody. So you know, these are like quote unquote big deal, at least in the world of whoever cares about this type of stuff. And so that's going to be the big news, the big sales the next morning, a Monday. So this is a Sunday night, and to help promote it, they're bringing in a YouTube or Instagram or Twitter
influencer.
Influencer, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. To come in, so some, you know, preppy girls, whatever. So that's, they're going to do that at like midnight and all that other stuff. And they're setting up the entire store to get ready for the big sale that next morning, including the owner of the store who makes an appearance to help pump up the crew and whatnot. And then he leaves. And so the crew stays behind with a handful of assistants. So Craig is the man store manager, and then he has a bunch of assistants. The owner of the store is one of his – her. She stays behind, his assistants, basically a regional manager. She stays behind as well. And so there's a group of like, you know, 8 to 10 people basically there. Lord – Hunter, Peyton,
Jesse, isn't it Jesse or
Gemma, wasn't it?
I thought it was
Gemma.
Jesse.
Was one Shruti.
Shruti. Another. Yeah,
Gemma. Okay, Gemma's the one.
I think
yeah, most of my notes are just names because there are so many people coming at us very quickly.
Yeah. So basically the main ones are Lord, Craig, Hunter, Jules. That's it. She goes. Her name's Peyton Jules, but she goes by Jules. Gemma.
Gemma.
Gemma is the regional manager. I think.
Or she's another manager. She's a rival to Craig.
Yeah.
Whoever's going to get that promotion.
That's right.
So. Yeah, she doesn't have a very big part in the film. I mean, unless I missed her. She's kind of introduced late in the film, kind of, not long before she dies.
Right. And then Barb. I think she's the influencer.
And Peyton is the influencer.
Okay,
I think Barb, I think, is the manager.
Okay, so Barb. All right, yeah. So I'm getting an Oscar. Then who's the first one that dies? The hot chick.
Gemma. I think that's Gemma.
Gemma. Yeah, I've actually got it. I've got them numbered here. So Gemma goes first, then Hunter, then Lorne, then Peyton, then Barb, then spoiler warning, by the way, then Shruti, and then Craig, and then the Globe.
Right, and then Libby.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which sucks. Okay.
All right. Oh, at that point, I didn't really care. I was hoping they all died.
But I liked her up until the end, and she died.
Oh,
I was like,
no. I mean, I liked the character just as I liked Shruti too. But once they went all out and decided to kill, I said, okay, yeah, that's cool. I actually kind of liked it because it was more original that they didn't survive. In other words, the final girls don't survive is actually kind of cool. Because that's unique.
I did like the first 15 minutes of this movie because I really enjoyed as she was getting used to everybody and she was learning how this company is, and they make her buy new clothes even though she's wearing the clothes of the company, and she can't get the discount because she doesn't technically start until 12:01.
So, I laughed at the because their slogan was a better tomorrow today, which is, you know, and then of course she can't get the discount today because she doesn't start till tomorrow.
Right.
You know, it is literally dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The first 15 to 20 minutes of this film was awesome.
Yeah.
Right. And it is, the whole thing is a satire on office culture, on corporate woke culture, right? Is what it is. Because they talk about how the jeans are, and their clothing is all
geo organic. What's the one?
Non-GMO, all organic, child labor.
I forget what they call it. Yeah. Free trade.
Free trade. Yeah.
They're not a store that has departments. They have ecosystems.
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, all this kind of stuff that makes you want to gag, or at least it makes me want to gag.
Out of control.
Yeah. You know, and then stuff that is that sort of corporate culture, which is you're not allowed in the store unless you're wearing their clothes, and you can't wear last season's clothes. You have to wear this season's clothes. So poor Libby is like forced on it before she even has her first day of work, and therefore before she has her first paycheck, to have to go buy a small wardrobe so she has stuff to wear. Because, right. But I am wearing your clothes. Yeah, but no, that's last season's. So I just got
it last
month.
That was awesome.
And certainly I imagine that will identify with a lot of people who work in places like that. I'm sure, like, you know, you will be shot on sight if you're in an Apple store and you pull out a Google phone.
I'll say this. This is where Barrett is 100% right. If this was a regular comedy and they didn't have any of the horror, this would have been a damn good movie.
Yeah.
Once they had the first...
But that's not the movie they made.
No, it's not.
And it's not the movie you turned... And it shouldn't have been the movie you tuned in to see either.
It wasn't the movie I intended to see, but I can look at this movie and go, this version sucked. They could have been done better.
Yeah, I was expecting to laugh my ass off, like Zombievers or Shaun of the Dead or something like... Or get, you know... some grins on my face like Evil Dead 2 or something, but I didn't get any of that. That was the problem. So with the horror comedy, if you prefer, Mike.
No, I think that for me, I think where it loses a little bit in the back half is that they have like a 10 Little Indians thing going along.
Yeah.
And then once they kill off the influencer, that stops.
Right. That's when everybody knows there's a problem.
Right. I don't even care that everybody knows there's a problem. You know, just like in 10 Little Indians, at some point everybody notices that people are disappearing, right? Yeah. At some point you can only murder so many people before everyone realizes Jason is in the camp or Freddy is not you up.
Let me phrase. When she dies, the influencer dies, everybody knows that the people missing are actually dead now and they weren't just miss. They weren't just, you know, off. You know,
well, that's where the movie goes downhill for me, because I actually like the influencer's death, and it's right until then, and then it's just chaos everywhere. If the pants were still just like crawling around trying to get people to kill them, and it wasn't necessarily instantaneous, like they just jump on somebody and kill them instantly, I think I would have enjoyed it more. Like if it was a more of a slow kill, you know, the pants trying to get to people and killing them, but it. You know, from there, it just went downhill. Because I really liked the influencer, too. I thought that was a great part of this movie, too.
And I do think they set up some rules, or seem to be setting up rules, and then the rules kind of go away. By which I mean,
exactly.
Like, so the, well, that's not tone.
I didn't say that was tone. I was just saying,
So they have, I can't remember what the slacks were called. The name for them. And for some reason there.
Oh, were the slacks? Was it SS?
Yeah, it did say SS.
That was
on there.
Schultz.
And it looked like the SS logo.
And it was
too.
Right. It was the SS logo on the ass cheeks of the pants.
Yeah.
Right. And with every time. So basically, if you know your SS logo, the double lightning, well, not quite lightning bolt. Right, so there's basically it's made up of these four rectangles, and every time the pants kills somebody, one of the four rectangles fills in with red.
Yes.
Right, now, this is, you know, you're shaving a haircut bit, right? You know, you're building towards a thing. You start with, you know, you know, bump, bada, bump, bump. You need that in. You wait for that last half. So they show you the first three rectangles being filled in with the first three victims.
Yes.
You're building to a thing. And then you net once they get victim four, who is the
influencer who
gets killed on camera, you never see it again,
yep.
Really. I mean, maybe you flash to it, but it's not done as like the reveal that you got with the other three. And then the question, and well, then what were they counting towards? Like, what did this gain a special ability by this? Because you do notice its powers are getting stronger, right? So it starts by strangling the person who puts on the jeans. And then it's able to leap out and smashes number two into the clothes hanger, coat hanger,
yep.
Right? It's getting more and more animated as it goes along. And then after that, all the pants seem to have the ability to do the same thing anyway. They all have the ability to move along.
Right.
So you can't even say that it was like powering up, right? That with each kill, it's becoming more powerful.
Right.
So there was, I felt a little bit of cheating it. But again, to me, it's Killer Pants film. It's a movie about Killer Pants.
Yeah, that's true. But if it was written better and it followed the same rules throughout the film, it could have been a better film.
I've seen far worse written films.
But that doesn't matter because if those far worse films are crap too. So the point is,
but you like some of those. So I really didn't have a big. These are relatively minor things in for me. And what's a horror comedy and a movie that's not trying to take itself seriously.
Well, see, that's the thing, Mike. That's fair. You said it right there. You said for you, and that's the problem. Is that let me rephrase. That's not a problem. That's the difference. For you, these things don't bother you, but they may bother me. They may bother Barrett.
Yeah,
they may.
I'm
bother
not saying you're
Eric
wrong. I'm just saying. I'm just saying I don't think that they're real issues. Not for me.
Well, other people may, is all. I know
that goes with everything. There's somebody out there who doesn't like Lawrence of Arabia. You know, it is what it is.
That's correct. Yeah, as I always say, it is. Even the great films are 98%. There's always
and some dumbass is going to think that The Gallows is a classic film.
That is probably true.
Speak for ourselves and that's really it. I mean, we can relay what we've heard other people say to add perspective. You know, I've heard people complain about this. I've heard people, I've not read any reviews about this film. So I have no idea why the critics liked it. I have no idea why the people who didn't like it didn't like it. And I know people, not speaking of this film, who will see something like Zombievers and they'll just immediately dismiss it because of the premise, or they'll just say it is a dumb movie and therefore it can't be a good movie because it's a silly premise. So I have no idea why people, you know, why people are giving a thumbs up, thumbs down, what the reason is. I don't know if it's, you know, the critics who like it because they thought it was clever and funny, or if they like it because it's making a political statement. I really have no idea.
Well, it's
me
funny.
I have not read any of the reviews. Go on, Barrett.
There's a movie that I love because it's so bad, it's just hilarious. It's called Slugs. I don't know if either of you have seen it.
I've heard of it.
And it's so bad, it's funny. This movie is trying to be serious, but it's, I don't know. It just doesn't hit the right notes for me to be so bad. It's good and so good that I like it.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, like you, Barrett, you summed it up. The first 15 minutes was really good. And I thought this film was going to be really good. And then for whatever reason, whether it's they didn't follow the rules, whether it was tonal shifts, whether it was something else, whether they, I don't know. It just went downhill for me at that point too. And then of course they add a political statement at the end, which oddly overpowered both the horror and the comedy. It was weird. It felt like I don't know. It was just interesting.
Well, this is why I talk about corporate woke culture, which is the, is what it's criticizing. It's not criticizing woke culture. It's criticizing corporate woke culture, which is paying lip service to things and, you know, not doing. For instance, there has been a lot of virtue signaling right now about being against anti-Asian violence or discrimination or what have you. Yeah. You know, so I saw that on Amazon, like phrase, we stand against anti-Asian racism. Well, that's nice to know. I didn't think that they actually were in favor of that. It's not going to change my desire to buy the new toaster. I'm sure, and I'm not. So let me move away from picking on Amazon for this. I'm sure. Probably, I wouldn't shock me if Disney put some statement out there. But at the same time, they had no problem filming the new Mulan within sight of a Uyghur concentration camp.
Right.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, they did.
I watched the movie and enjoyed it, but I didn't know that part about it.
Which company was this?
Disney. The new Mulan movie, they filmed like next door to a Uyghur concentration camp.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You know, you see these things as like, oh, we don't like the law this state is passing, and if you don't do this law about this whatever bill, then we're never going to film in your state again. And then they go make movies in China and do everything they can to appeal to the Chinese market and appease the Chinese government.
Well, and they can do it over there because whatever, you know, no one cares about what's going on over there. All they care about is what's going on in Georgia, for example, or unless it doesn't fit.
Well, they're hoping people don't pay attention to that. Yeah, you know, they're hoping people don't see that there's a bit of hypocrisy there, and it's because they know that their American audience cares about this thing, and the American audience, by and large, doesn't give a shit what's going on in China, and the Chinese audience doesn't care about whatever bills they're passing somewhere in the States.
I feel like we used to protest more things outside of this country. I feel that's dropped off a lot.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, I think it's because everything has become a split down the middle, and people will just say, for whatever reason, China is not considered the same as the Soviet Union was during the Cold War, and I have no idea why, because technically they're kind of alike. So why is that? And yet half of this country doesn't care. And I think
I think there's a bigger part of this country that doesn't care. I mean, this was let's take a look at the NBA. All right. I apologize for getting off on this as a political rant. And I'm not taking a side here. But I am pointing out a hypocrisy, which is
– That's fine to talk about all this because this is technically kind of what this film you're saying is winking at. So go on.
Right. So with the NBA, right, they had an issue where someone – I am not an NBA fan, so I apologize.
It was LeBron James. And Mark Cuban were a couple of people.
Who made a comment about the Uyghurs. And they
– It wasn't – Someone else, yeah, you're right.
And they had to, the NBA like did serious backpedaling. I think it was the Houston Rockets, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you could be right.
And they had to do backpedaling and apologizing to appease their Chinese overlords.
Right.
But they had no problem with letting everybody after the George Floyd incident last year, letting everybody wear Black Lives Matter and or save the schools or whatever hashtag they felt like putting on their jerseys, that they had no problem with, but they did have problems with, because in this country, we'll allow them to do that.
Basically, this is what happened. I remember what happened now, Mike. Basically, Hong Kong basically got invaded by China. They were already part of China, but they lost their quote-unquote independence.
Right.
Whatever it was, they're
slowly being violated down to non-democracy.
Right, yes. Exactly. And so some guy wanted to put Free Hong Kong or something like that on his jersey because the NBA was allowing players now to be politically active and allowing them to put patches. And when this guy put that on, they got pissed, and then they said that you can't put certain things in, and they were basically all anti-China stuff. So there was a huge backlash on the NBA because why can you put on a Black Lives Matter or whatever, but you can't put on Free Hong Kong? And So the NBA had to backpedal and allow free Hong Kong and a couple other things like free the Uyghurs and so on and so forth. And so, like you said, Mike, that's the hypocrisy is, okay, Black Lives Matter is important to a lot of people and whatever, but why not Hong Kong? And that was the hypocrisy, right? Is because
right, and so this isn't a film that's saying that whatever your stance on these issues, the film isn't saying that being anti-GMO is bad. The film isn't saying being anti-child labor is bad. The film is criticizing corporations that claim to be in favor of these things, but in reality are kind of going and doing the other thing, that corporate hypocrisy, you know, that they're using it as marketing gimmicks and they don't really buy into it.
Right. Right. No, you're absolutely right. Basically what it is they see half the country of Canada in this movie, half the country in this Canada is quote unquote woke. And especially the generation that they're, you know, trying to sell their stuff to. So they see it as a opportunity to make huge money when in fact they, if one day these people said, you know, don't club baby seals, this company would probably say, okay, club baby seals. That's our new motto, you know? So it's all money. It has nothing to do with really being woke. They're playing up the morons who just follow the crowd and make money
or
off
not just
morons.
Following it, but are exploiting it, right? Using it. And, you know, you can go through. There's an awful lot of people who don't. I am not a fan of slogan culture, of hashtag culture, of bumper sticker culture, you know, because corporate speak. But I'm saying it's because most of these issues tend to be, you know, with like Uyghurs in concentration camps being a very obvious exception, be a little bit more nuanced and have a lot of, you know, sides to it that don't get discussed when you just throw a bumper sticker out there. And I've seen certainly some highly intolerant people who and hateful people who preach love. You know, it's a slogan is easy. Real conversations are difficult. Whatever.
Right.
And this is a case of a company that has reduced that, you know, whatever the issue is with Asian violence right now, whatever the actual numbers are that I've not really researched, Amazon going, we're against it. Really, it's a slogan and it's a marketing gimmick. It's not because they necessarily – I don't think they're against Asian, but they don't really give a shit.
And it's funny. The funny thing is, I mean, you know, Asian violence or Asian bigotry, it really isn't even that. It's the perpetrators that are doing the violence that is the real problem, right? So in other words, the people that are protesting Asian violence, I'm sure a lot of them agree Asian violence is bad, but a lot of them are protesting it because of the perpetrators. And so when the perpetrators don't fit the narrative or the intersectionality that they're going with, it's dropped off the map, as we saw with, you know, the New York City SLEC woman who was beaten up in a subway, or the 66-year-old Asian woman who was beaten up and on the street, and then a security guard closed the door on her and didn't help or even call 911, or the Pakistani Asian American who was murdered in a carjacking. Those stories don't fit the narrative.
Right. Well, we got a bit of that. I apologize if I'm getting any facts wrong. The was the shooting in Colorado?
Yes. Yeah. And even the shooting in Georgia, because again, not all the victims were of the same heritage, and yet they were trying to say it was one thing. But go on, Mike.
With the shooting in Colorado, I apologize. I forget what was his. He was an American, but it was ethnic heritage.
Heritage was Assyrian of Muslim descent. Now, even the right wingers are wrong in all this too.
Right, exactly. So this was my point: is that when this happened, you immediately got the people on the left, not everybody, but some people on the left, going, "Ha! Another evil white person shooting up with guns." And then it came out, Syrian, and all the people, and they were like, not all, again, some people on the right were going, aha, Middle Eastern terrorists. It's like, no, born American.
But it was neither because both sides
want to use it as a political talking point, and they jumped into exactly what you said, their pre-existing narratives. How can we take this fucking tragedy?
It was the left was trying to say it was a white Christian with guns, and then when they found out it wasn't a white Christian with guns, the right were trying to say that, he's not white, and he's not Christian, but
he's Al-Qaeda, or he's a terrorist.
But he is white. If the U.S. Census Bureau puts anybody who traces their roots back to North Africa, the Middle East, or Europe as Caucasian or white. So what the real narrative was, he was Muslim. If he was not Muslim, and if he was a Lebanese Christian, then the left was right, but the right are all wrong because the right are trying to say he's not white.
Right. But the point being that it is just hypocrisy on the part of people and using sloganeering and pre-existing narratives to corrupt reality and to twist facts to fit the story you want to tell in the first place.
Well, the best one today that happened today was a U.S. congresswoman who was chanting children in cages for years during the Trump administration is now saying that the ones that are happening now under the Biden administration, which is the exact same thing, she's trying to say that it's a global problem or something, and trying to say it's not a bigotry anymore. So it's just so hypocritical, and it's like you said, everybody just falls back into their little bubble rather than just saying the facts. Just say the fucking facts. Kids are in cages now, just as they were fucking 4 years ago. And they refuse to do it because everybody falls into their little bubbles instead of being consistent and just saying the fucking facts.
Anyhow, but the point is, it's not even, and sometimes facts fit narratives. It is regardless. But anyway, this is a digression away from what the film was talking about, which is talking about hypocrisy on the part of the corporations, which is really what it was.
All this talk has kind of brought up something I didn't like, in that the main guy that owns the company just leaves and is never seen again. So we don't get to feel anything towards him getting some justice.
I was kind of bummed about that too, Barrett, because he was there. He played a big role, and yet it was really only a cameo.
Yeah.
And it was kind of odd because then he leaves and that's it. And all these peons, including Craig, for that matter, because no matter how evil he is, you know, they let him on saying, you're going to be a regional manager, you have a career here, blah, blah, blah. And all these peons get murdered for basically what this cameo actor, or let me phrase it, cameo character is the actual villain of, and he gets to leave and he doesn't die.
Yeah, and you can tell he's evil, but maybe that's the point of the movie. I didn't like it.
But I don't – I think there's a – I also think – he's – I'm assuming he knows what's going on in his company.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Certainly you can have people who don't know that things are going on underneath their watch, but this seems to be such a public statement, an advertising campaign, and a wide – this isn't like, one manufacturer somewhere was doing a thing.
He gives an icky.
Oh, they do say they're outsourcing, right? They outsource all this, so they really don't know.
But he gives an icky feeling even throughout his scenes. He just you kind of get a bad feeling about him,
right?
Well, I like what Mike just said though, because they say all these wonderful things and how they don't use they use free trade and all this other stuff, but they always have the fallback, which is what you said, Mike, which is they outsource.
Yeah.
So how do we know? So it's not our fault. We were told that it was free trade. Right.
But I think the big thing is the final scene, post-credit scene, a pre-credit scene, where you get the throng of consumers rushing in to buy these jeans, which we've all seen the Black Friday videos and stuff like that, and you know, and it goes falls just as hard on them, because I think the truth of the matter is, most people, if these genes do make your ass look good, won't give a shit if it's GMO or slave labor or any of that. And we, you know, we certainly heard that with, you know, anytime like people complain about whatever, Nike employing slave labor, child labor, but they've got no problem protesting it on their Apple phone, you know, which has its factories in China as well.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
In the end, it's there's a lot of standing up and virtue signaling, and it is that is to me kind of the main point of the film. Whether it makes the film, again, I'm not going to say it's, you know, it's a great movie because it's making a point. It's making a very easy point. It's not a controversial point,
right?
You know, I've you know, at this point, I mean, we understand there's basically two major villains. Or, you know, three, I guess you get terrorists, governments, and
media.
And well, I was going to say corporations, because they're the things that have power. But it's always, you know, there is no corporation. There's no good corporation in a movie. They're all evil corporations. It's there's no benevolent businessmen except for Steve Jobs, apparently.
Steve Jobs. He's good.
It's a thing. It's nobody wants the underdog to be the villain. You know, which was sort of the delicious kind of twist in Falling Down, right? You know, what do you mean I'm the bad guy? You know, it's just
right.
So yeah, it's just a matter of execution. I like the fact that it had a thing to say, but the fact that it had a thing to say isn't a, like Zombievers didn't really have anything to say. It wasn't trying to say anything. It wasn't trying to make a statement.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's fair too. But I think that another problem with the statement too was they were. You could argue it was interesting that they chose India. I'm assuming it's India because they're Hindus. Versus say China, because I'm even thinking this movie was too chicken to say China, and so they decided to say, well, you know, let's use India. It just felt that way.
Well, it might be
because we got all these countries for years, and I heard this today on a podcast, which is when during the Cold War, none of our companies went to Russia, or let me rephrase, the Soviet Union, to have to use a slave labor and make them millions. We would never have done that, and yet we had no problems. All these companies throughout the world have no problems to do that with China, when China, you could argue, is the same thing as the Soviet Union, and no one has a problem with it. And so this movie would have been better if they really pointed the finger at not only the company but the country that they use for the slave labor, and they didn't do that. Instead, they used India, and I don't know why.
Well, I think India is one of the countries that is used for that.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think
they have a huge population, and just like China, and they do have a lot of people that are roped into things like that because that's the only work they can get.
I think, and I don't want to give them too much credit one way or another. Honestly, I think part of it might simply have been being able to use the Bollywood joke. You know,
It could be.
There is not a similar joke you can use with China.
To China. Yeah, that's true.
And the other thing is that there are real problems in India still.
Yeah.
There really are. But the perception of India isn't the same perception as China. And if you throw this into workers being exploited in China, it changes the narrative a little bit from the perspective of a Western American audience or Canadian audience. I think it takes the target a little bit more off the back of the corporation and can move the target more onto China.
All right.
And I may be overthinking that. It may simply have been the Bollywood thing. It may have been, you know, who were the actors they had available. Maybe this was inspired by a real thing that happened in India. I have no idea. I have no idea what the inspiration for this film originally was.
Right.
So it could have been like they read an article about a poor Indian girl, you know, who
Honestly, her death
fell into the cotton gin or whatever.
India does grow cotton, so I mean,
her death was not malicious. It was unfortunate, and I felt that was unfortunate too. They should have made it a malicious death, and then the ghost's vengeance would have felt more better, I think. But for her to just have bad luck when she died, you know what I'm saying? If it was labor, all right, so you know what
but
I'm saying.
But this is, I think, the thing that really, like, look, there's accidents happen. Accidents happen in all sorts of jobs. Some jobs are obviously more risky than others. I think the damning point to this would be that the worker was like 13 years old.
Yeah,
right. It was the fact that it was child labor, and so once it becomes child labor, then any excuses as to it being a hazard of the job, kind of become hard to accept, right? Like that's sanitation workers have lots and lots of accidents. There's a lot of hazards in that job that people aren't aware of. You know, it's far more hazardous, I think, than like working as a police officer or a firefighter, if I remember correctly. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. But we don't think of it necessarily as a hazardous job, but it is one of the risks that go with the job. But if you have a 13-year-old doing it, we wouldn't just say, well, you know, it's what happens when you're working, and behind a garbage truck. You know, 13-year-old shouldn't have been working that job.
That is true. That is true. That is true. There is no excuse, no matter. I mean, again, this job that she was doing was most certainly not dangerous in the general term, because I mean, it's just, you know, it's in the fields picking vegetables, but in this case, cotton, and then bringing it to the gin. So it wasn't necessarily that dangerous, but. You can argue a 13-year-old shouldn't be doing that because that's child labor.
And you know, this was these kind of conversations remind me of the TV show The Good Place, which I don't know if either of you ever watched.
Yeah, my mother used to watch it all the time.
I watched the first half of the first season, and I liked it. We just never watched the rest of it.
Well, one of the jokes in a later season is simply the fact that. At a certain point, the world has gotten so complicated and so convoluted and so many things interconnected that it's impossible for you to come out ahead because you're always supporting someone or something that's bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about this with Green Inferno, right? But the people that on the one hand will decry anyone for judging, how a culture and judging another culture for being culturally different will also be the first ones to then stand up and condemn that culture for employing child labor.
Yeah.
Right. And so you end up with these inherently contradictory philosophies, you know, which is let the other countries do what they want. Oh, wait, unless they do the things that I don't want them to do, then it's okay to condemn them.
Right.
And each statement on its own, well, they're a different culture. Right. Don't judge people based on their different culture. And then when the
the United States president just actually said a month ago in a town hall with a news anchor that what's going on in the Uyghur camps, it could be a cultural thing. And we don't have any right to say anything. So you're absolutely right. So continue your point, Mike. I just wanted to.
Right, so my point is, again, each statement on its own is perfectly fine. And then when you compare and you realize they're both saying opposite things, it's an inherent contradiction. We all live our lives as contradictory beings, right? If no human being is completely.
The question is if you're being honest to yourself though, or not, or are you just saying for spin purposes or for your own agenda.
Right. And in this case, that is blatantly, but again, it's the idea that the people who are all pro in this film, you know, the ones who are claiming to be happy about all this stuff and spouting all the buzzwords and corporate phraseology in this film, they're all really just interested in having a hot ass. That's really what it comes down to. And they will pay $175 for jeans that give them a good ass. Child labor be damned.
Which is, yeah, which is why they are killed and how you can feel a little less sorry for them, because they are part of what's causing the child labor to occur.
But
their cluelessness.
But even if we do have people who care just about having their ass look good in a pair of pants, which is fine, for the company in this film, or any company in real life for that matter, says all these things and it's just a lie, then you could argue they're more responsible than the people who just want to have a good ass, because technically the people who just want a good ass could have had a choice between company A and this Canadian clothing company called CCC. And if they see two companies, one doesn't say anything and the other company, CCC, says, we don't use child labor. We free trade. We use organic. You're more, and we have the same price, maybe a little more, but look what we're doing. You're apt to go for the pair of jeans, even though both will make your ass look good. You're going to go with the one that is doing the quote unquote good in the world, but you're lied to and you don't know it. You see what I'm saying? So even though some of those jerks who just want to have a nice ass aren't necessarily all that guilty if they actually believe they're buying the pants that are, free trade and all that as they've read.
Well, I think part of what the movie's saying is that if they really looked into it, they would know that, which I don't know that I agree with that necessarily, but they would have an idea that maybe this is too good to be true.
Yeah, that's fair. But again, a lot of these people are also stupid in the sense that they believe that the U.S. government, or let me rephrase, the Canadian government would not allow a company to lie like that, that blatantly public, right? I mean, in the U.S., at least, I don't know how it is in Canada, but in the U.S., you have to put certain labels. I mean, medicine, it'll say you can open up, or vitamins, right? You get a bottle of vitamins, and it says, "Will calm you down, will give you a larger sperm count," what all that stuff. But then at the bottom, they still have to have a line that says, "None of this has been proven in an experimental setting," or something like that. So what they're doing is they're pouting off that a certain plant actually is known to give someone more energy. And though this pill doesn't prove – it hasn't been proven in science to do that, the plant product they're using has been known to do that, so they can put it on the label, but they still have to write it hasn't been proven in the science room. So you figure a lot of these bozos who are buying these jeans just assume that the government of Canada has been is watching this company from to not lie so blatantly. You see what I'm saying? I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I would think a lot of those people honestly believe that the company is using organic and is using free trade and isn't.
I think that's what we have evolved to. I think, 20 years ago, people would have questioned a lot more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, someone who's being true to themselves will know if it's, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of people aren't anymore. A lot of people just say, they're on my side, so it's okay.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, I think. And so, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they believe the company is doing it, but they believe for different reasons. They believe because it's on my side. That's that's my belief system. So since they're saying that they use free trade and organic and whatever, GOA or whatever the thing is, then they're on my side. Even though it's probably not true, they're saying they're doing it and they're on my side.
Well, and you see that in the main character, because her whole world is destroyed when she finds out that it's not free trade and they're using, children,
right,
and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and even when you do find out, a lot, like Mike made an excellent point about the NBA, right? The Black Lives Matter and all that, whatever, kneeling during the national anthem, whatever, and a lot of people support all that stuff and whatever, you know, justice and so on and so forth. But they also know that they pissed on Hong Kong and the Uyghurs, or the Uyghurs, and yet they still are saying, "Oh, yeah, but they're doing good. They like the BLM and they want justice for minorities or people of color, you know, and whatever, whatever." And they're willing to overlook other stuff. So even if this company says they do these things, they probably know that they're doing other bad things, but they're willing to overlook because they're at least doing some of these things. You know, so it's like partial good, and that's enough for acceptance. But I don't know. Mike, what's your opinion? You've been quiet for the last 5 minutes. In this.
Oh, because I said plenty. I mean, I think we've gotten really far afield, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
But to be honest, this stuff is more interesting than the film, in a sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a Oh, let me tune into this discussion about a horror comedy about killer bees. Let's talk about forced sterilization and child labor and, you know, racism.
That's the thing, though. The movie went there, right? If they didn't go there, they just did the zombiever route, like you mentioned earlier, Mike, then all this other stuff wouldn't matter. But the funny thing is like Libby, when she croaks, she doesn't get croaked because of the pants. She croaks because
consumerism. Well,
they run her over and she cracks her head on the ground and she dies.
Right. Well, I mean, humor doesn't have to be unserious, right? I mean, that's the whole point of satire.
Yes.
You know, it's why people get upset about the, banning of something like Huck Finn, right? Because Huck Finn wasn't just dropping an N-word in the book because it was funny. You know, it's a book that has humor in it, but it's humor with a very, very specific point to make that is not entirely irrelevant today. You can use humor to make points. They're using their humor to make a point. They're shooting an easy target, but those are always the best targets to shoot at. And either enjoy the way they did or you don't.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. I mean, you know, I mean the best jokes in the film are the stuff like that where, you know, the hunter is rather, you know, get laid in the bathroom, or Libby dies, you know, from the least expecting thing, and yet it's the most obvious way she would die. So it's stuff like that, and like you said, you know, shoot the easy target because those are the easiest, and those can sometimes turn out to be the most funniest because everybody will get it. And I think that was the point on some of those. Let's see. What else do we want to discuss?
I don't know that there's much more to discuss about the actual movie.
Yeah, like I said, I think they went as far as they could with the way that, you know, they thought, like, what are ways a person could die from genes? Okay, you put the genes on, they crush you, got that. The genes attack you on the hanger and smash your face into the coat hook. Okay. You get zippered to death. Okay.
Strangled.
The legs wrap around you and strangle you. Okay. And then, well, we'll just kind of do the rest of them off screen in a mass violence. And
right.
And I think that's where it kind of loses, you know, and I think that's where it loses some of its momentum. The countdown issue kind of disappears, right? Because then pretty much all the nameless characters in the film, are killed.
I think if the influencer had lasted longer, too, maybe till the end, it would have been a funnier movie.
Oh, maybe. I mean, she was annoying, but funny and annoying. I don't know. I had very conflicted feelings about the character.
I would have liked to have seen her live longer. That would have made it better for me, I think.
I would have liked to see her die harder.
Die harder, live longer. Both would be perfect.
Well, I'll say one thing about the film is that the things that they were really trying to point at, they got them all, and they got all the right ones. You know, like the influencer, you know, all the human rights and environmental things that the company is supposed to do, and you know, and to satire all that, the corporate culture, you know, so they hit all those things really well. So I'll give them credit for that.
Well, I mean, even stuff that, you know, I laughed at Shruti and Libby saying, "Oh, I like Bollywood music," to the Indian girl.
That was funny.
Who
that
then scene. Feigns outrage while at, you know, that she just assumes she likes Indian music because her parents are from India, and at the same time she actually is listening to Bollywood music. So, you know, so, you know, it's kind of making fun of the, you know, yeah, sometimes there is a reason why stereotypes exist. You know, and the same thing with, you know, you speak, you know, you speak the language, right? It's like there's over 200 languages in India.
That was funny. She did speak Hindi, though, which is.
But she happened to conveniently speak the same language as the pants.
Yeah, well, Hindi is the number one language. It's 200 and yeah. It's 300 million people speak Hindi or something like that. But she says she also knew Urdu, I think, too. So
yeah, she did.
So, yeah, which is the one in Pakistan, I think. But yeah, she it was convenient to understand. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And she died to the guy, so she didn't even get to die from the pants.
Yeah, well, she wasn't probably going to die from the pants because the pants were really indifferent to both her and Libby after they found out that they weren't part of the people that they wanted revenge on. So they had to – if they're going to kill her, they had to kill her somehow, and so they had the guy kill her. And that was weird too. That didn't – that felt like out of place, I felt, but I guess.
Yeah, and I think – see, I mean – this is the like Drag Me to Hell, right? Where there's no appeasing vengeance. Vengeance is vengeance.
Yeah.
It and you know, so by making the pants reasonable in its quest for revenge, that just wants to get the message out there. I'm glad that they didn't, because I don't know how they would have resolved that. Right, where the pants have just collapsed. You know, the people certainly weren't coming back. I am kind of glad that they didn't get around to giving the pants what the pants wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't even know if the pants even cared, right? I think it's a 13-year-old girl ghost, so all she wanted was vengeance. So I don't think she really cared about the lies the company was saying, right?
Well, she said, like, if we tell the people, if we tell your story, we you know.
Right. But that's the thing that's funny about Libby and Shruti, I think her name was,
yeah.
is that they were clueless because they thought the ghost wanted to tell their story about all the lies, when the ghost didn't really care about that. The ghost wanted to tell everybody about
the pants. Kind of leave them alone after that, though, right? I mean,
murder.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No. But that's the thing, is that the pants just wanted to tell everybody about how she died and the company didn't care. While Libby and Shruti thought the pants wanted the lie, all the lies to be told, when the pants probably didn't even care about the other lies, because again, we're talking about a 13-year-old girl who probably doesn't even know what free trade even means, or that slave you know, child labor is bad. You know, she just, this is my life, I don't know if it's bad, this is just how I live, you know?
I just like the fact that I get to add another thing to my list of ways that humanity can die out, and that's through a pants apocalypse.
Hey, that would work. Yeah, that works.
But
all right, so yeah, yeah, I think I like Shruti the best. I liked her character the best.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. I liked her. I like Libby.
I like Libby the best.
Yeah, Libby was good too. I just liked how Shruti was like, "Fuck you," you know. I mean, she was like the anti everything. Like everything sucked. I like that about her.
I did also like the one guy. What was his name? I think it was Lauren. Was the
Lords? Lords,
right? Because he was a douchebag, but I kind of laughed. So like when he didn't want to do the job, he's like, "I can't leave my ecosystem. I've gotten two new hires. God knows what's going to happen if I leave here." And he's just, you know, he's full of shit, but, you know, he manages to outsmart his boss, and I can always appreciate that.
Indeed. Yeah, yeah. That was good. That was good. Yeah. Anything else that anybody wanted to talk about?
No, I think this is it. I think we've beaten these pants to death. Put them in the wash, in the dryer, spin cycle, hung them out to dry.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think they could have killed the pants by just throwing bleach on them. Instead, he pulls out the fire extinguisher, but he should have got a bottle of bleach. That would have worked. Yeah. All right. Very well. Very well. Yeah, so I guess there's not much really else to talk about. I mean, I do kind of like it a little more now because if you look at it as just a satire on the lies of the companies and the gullibility of the people who follow those lies, it's kind of cool. It's kind of funny, but it still has some problems. And I think we talked a little bit about them, go on, Mike.
Well, I think, look, first of all, the movie's about killer jeans. So that immediately is going to make people go, that sounds awesome or that sounds stupid. So it's already the nice thing about the title is it self filters, right? Sort of like Godzilla versus Kong. Nobody's going to tune in to see this who isn't already at least somewhat curious about it. And then like any other kind of comedy, you know, it's either going to work for you or it's not going to work for you.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Yeah. All right. So I guess we can go on to another segment of the podcast, if there's anything, which is news and what we've been watching. Why don't we start with you, Mike? Is there any news that you wanted to bring up or what you've been watching?
Well, I did just come back from the theater from watching Godzilla versus Kong, but we are going to talk about that next week. So
2 weeks from now. 2 weeks now. Next week is the Block Island Sound.
All right. 2 weeks from now, we're going to talk about Godzilla versus Kong. I also saw Nobody.
How was that?
With
that
Bob Odenkirk. I liked it a lot.
That's episode worthy, right?
It might be. I don't know if Eric Webster would be that into it because it's a lot of shooting and punching and kicking. Christopher Lloyd has a small role in it, but it's a lot of fun. It is very much, if you like John Wick, you'd probably like this, even though it's not a carbon copy. There it certainly has elements of that franchise in it, you know, in terms of the guy that's out of the business who's pulled back into the business. Alan Kirk's humor is mostly pulled back for a fairly straight role, but I really enjoyed it. I'd have to go through my list, but it might be my favorite movie I've seen in theaters this year. Not that I've seen a lot of movies in theaters this year. But I'm catching up pretty quick. I did want to mention, so that it's just made news about, Knives Out. Netflix just paid $450 million, for the second and third, for part two and part three, for the two sequels that they guess they're making to that film.
Oh, wow.
And
that's cool news.
Yeah. Now, so no idea if that means they're going to go straight to Netflix or if they will also have a theatrical release on top of it. You know, and I saw some people wondering like why they would just sell the rights to Netflix like that for two films. And, you know, the first film was a huge success, but it made $311 million. And that's after a $40 million budget. But then you usually have to double that to make break even. You know, because usually you have like a $40 million advertising budget and whatnot. And, you know, so let's say it made about $211 million. Well, that's $450 million split between two films is, you know, $225 million each. Without having to share it with theaters, without having to advertise it at all, without having to share some of it with the stars. Now they can just negotiate straight up salaries for whatever stars they get. And the odds are very good. You know, like any sequels, the budgets will be higher.
Who makes those films? What company?
I don't know what company made it. It was directed by Rian Johnson. Is all I know. And stars Daniel Craig. I don't know who it was that produced it. It just seems like, and especially when you're doing this post pandemic, you know, and you don't know what the film business is going to be like, you know, and whenever these sequels come out, 2 or 3 years down the road. I think it seems like a fairly smart idea. Yeah, there's a chance that one of these films could become like a $700 million film, in which case you crapped out. But hey, this is that bird in the hand, you know, versus two in the bush. And given the current climate, I don't blame them for taking it.
Right. And they still probably own the rights for further sequels. So they could just sell them more, or they could say, nope, we're going back.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? And if this is lucrative for both, then obviously they can renegotiate and for part four, part five, however far it goes. But, you know, you don't count that far down the road on your first film.
That's the truth. Yeah. Good points. Good points. So that's interesting. I can see why Netflix did it, though, because their competition and their market is being cut out of the pie. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. And HBO Max, you know, is far behind its main competitors, but it had a, you know, between the Snyder Cut and Godzilla versus Kong, it's had a huge jump in subscriptions in the last
and
couple
Wonder
of
Woman
weeks.
Too. Oh, yeah. Just in the last couple of weeks. Yeah.
So
Tom and Jerry. That one,
Tom and Jerry didn't do a whole lot. This, like, it's getting some buzz about the noticeable jump in numbers. And I'm sure it's the two things.
Well,
are substantial. The question is whether it carries over more than a month.
I just know that all the kids on the street were all excited about Tom and Jerry. So again, that's only a small sample size of people, but it's a different generation. So maybe it was a big deal for parents with kids. I don't know, you know, and you just didn't hear the buzz, right? Because, you know,
well, it's not the buzz. I just didn't hear anything about improving the numbers, so I don't know that it was considered a success or not.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't read any information on that. Never mind for Godzilla.
No, with the Snyder Cut, like the numbers were pretty substantial in terms of now. In terms of like the boost in viewership, now again it had a lower floor, so it had a lot higher to go, and nobody else really had anything completely new that they were offering, and Warner Brothers was coming out with a 1-2 punch of Snyder Cut and Godzilla versus Kong. So yeah, to temper that a little bit, but the numbers were better. I mean, the numbers I think pretty much were better than Wonder Woman 84, if I remember correctly, and beat out Winter Soldier. So yeah, they were doing there. So they did really well with those numbers, and it's causing some issues in Warner Brothers, and we'll see where they go with that.
Interesting. Yeah, so that's some interesting news. Any other news or anything, Mike?
That's all that I could think of.
All right. What about what you've been watching? Anything you wanted to mention?
Well, I just mentioned. Oh, I've been watching the trying to catch up on The Expanse. I'd watched the first two seasons, and I don't want to say I gave up on it. I just didn't get around to watching it. And it's all available on Amazon Prime. So if you're
good
interested,
show.
Yeah, it is a really good show. It's been kind of compared to science fiction's Game of Thrones. It's going into its final season. I think the fifth season just finished airing.
Yep.
They had to kill off a cast member because of he couldn't keep his hands to himself. But other than that, yeah, it's been a really good series so far.
Very good, very good. Any other things, Mike?
That's it.
All right. What about yourself, Barrett? Any news, genre news, and also anything else like what you've been watching?
I don't have any genre news aside from Prince of Darkness has come out with a 4K edition. It's one of my favorite John Carpenter movies. So anybody's interested, check it out. And then as far as what I've been watching is I just watched the Godzilla versus Kong. I thought it was fairly good. And then I've been making my wife suffer with Babylon 5. I've been watching it on HBO Max. It's an old sci-fi show from the 90s.
Oh, yeah. And do you like it?
Yeah, I liked it when it first came out. It came out around the same time as Deep Space Nine, Star Trek, and they were compared a lot. It's pretty good. Harlan Ellison, sci-fi author, was one of the consultants on the show, so it was pretty well done, I thought.
Yeah.
So far.
It is. It has problems because it always suffered from ratings, and they thought they were going to be canceled, and so they kind of crammed the last story arc into the fourth season, and then they got renewed, and they had to stretch out the parts they didn't cover to cover the full fifth season when it wasn't supposed to be a whole season. So it kind of has pacing issues in the final run. I'm curious because I know they did some remastering on it, but I don't think they like redid the effects. So
they did not. Yeah, they did a little remastering from what I can tell. I only watched probably the first season back in the 90s. I watched some of the a few of the episodes of the later seasons that I really liked. So that's why I'm going back to watch it fully all the way through.
Yeah, it does get much better after the first season. First season lays down a lot of groundwork. But they shake up the cast a little bit after the first season. And this is a show that really did have everything unlike, say, Game of Thrones, mapped out from beginning to end, the whole five season arc. So it is able to employ more literary devices in terms of foreshadowing things because they know where they are going.
That's pretty cool. I know I read something about the main actor, and he had some mental issues, it said on Wikipedia, and that's why he dropped out after the first season. Which was interesting. Yeah. He was having like hallucinations and stuff, so he had to drop out because he was having a hard time.
That is tough.
Yeah. Bruce Boxleitner replaced him.
Which was a big improvement, in my opinion.
Right. Well, it could have been also because he was having issues off screen that affected his on screen performance. But
they do also actually bring him back in a role later on, in a small bit, and because they don't kill him off, they just reassign him. So he's not out of the series permanently.
Right. Interesting.
And he seemed to be on good terms with everybody, so I don't think that's really a big issue.
Right. He may have actually decided to leave himself. It may not have been pushed out, too.
He did. It said he decided to leave on his own.
Yeah,
and
they kept it secret until after he was dead. He told them they could talk about it once he was gone.
And to the credit of the showrunner, J. Michael Straczynski, which is one of the reasons I was doubtful about the show when it first started. And I had seen him. He used to attend ICON in Long Island frequently. So I had seen him a number of times there. And when the show was over, I was able to talk to him. And I told him, you know, I doubted your ability to pull this off, you know, but I was wrong. But one of the reasons I doubted his ability to pull it off was because you have things like actors. You know, and actors can leave a show and hold or be difficult to work with. And, you know, when you plan out a thing for 5 years, you know, what happens when your star decides to be a prima donna or
mm-hmm.
gets caught with hookers or whatever it is? But he wasn't an idiot, you know, and he knew to leave like trap doors in the storyline so that if something happened with a character, an actor, that he had ways to replace them and put somebody else in and allow the story to continue going forward.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. That is really good. Yeah, it's tough.
All
right, very well.
Yeah,
No worries. I don't have anything. Just still reading a novel. Called Reincarnation. What's it called, Barrett?
The Reincarnationists.
Yeah, but isn't it called The Reincarnation Papers or something? I don't know, something like that. Yeah,
oh,
maybe
it might be The Reincarnationist Papers. It's either that or Reincarnationists.
Yeah, something like that. So I'm almost done that. It's kind of a science-y fiction, maybe even dark fantasy, depending on your perspective. So reading that. Saw a film of my wife, but
it's not genre related. But yeah, nothing else. I got nothing. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh yeah. For folks who don't listen to the other podcast, I watched Greenland. That was a pretty good film. It was a disaster film.
Forgot about that.
yeah. So it's a disaster film starring Gerald Butler and Marina Bachrin, I think her name is. And yeah, that got really good reviews by critics. Again, doesn't really matter what critics think, but just bring it up as a note. Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was a good film. And look out for our upcoming episode of Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, where myself, Mike, and Barrett, along with a couple other co-hosts, talk about that film. So that'll be coming out sometime, hopefully in April of 2021. So next couple of weeks. That's pretty much it. That's all I got. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? All right. Before we give our final thoughts on Slacks, S-L-A-X-X. Actually, one of the best lines was, I'm size zero. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. That was good. Before we do that, we got some house cleaning stuff. So once again, it's www.darkdiscussions.com is the website, all news website that you should check out daily, since it's updated all the time if you're a follower of genre news. Email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, and we will read your message on the podcast. This one was a little more political because of the subject matter, so if you send anything that is negative, we will not read it, but if it's useful for the topic, we'll definitely read it.
I don't know if you're an illiterate bumfuck and we find your letter funny, we might read it.
That's true, we could. Yeah. Even though we haven't really picked on anybody, we're not that type of podcast. We kind of
just Abe
give people their dignity. Yeah, Abe, just Abe. Yeah, that's true. But also a couple other things. I'll do the first one, which is which I mentioned. Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews is another side podcast that I do, and Mike and Barrett are on it at times, and it basically is an all-encompassing podcast. It was originally supposed to review various Blu-rays of boutique labels, but it's turned into more of, a big umbrella podcast where it discusses, has some interviews on it. It does a lot of indie films. During June, we do the LGBTQ Pride Month, where we do about two lesbian movies, artistic ones, not the horror
wink wink ones. nudge.
No, they're true dramas. They're true dramas. They're high quality ones, not drive-in theaters. So we do art house as well. And then we've done we just did the disaster movie that's coming out. We did Wonder Woman 1984. And we do the B movie as well. So it's an all encompassing podcast that you should check out. Usually a new episode every 2 weeks. We just had one that was released this past week, about the honeymoon phase and Fair Crypt. Basically, it was a 1 hour interview with Chloe Carroll, who produced and was the star of honeymoon phase. She came on for an hour to do an episode. Barrett, me and you just wrapped up two podcasts.
We wrapped up Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, the Stand podcast, which you can listen to. And we also wrapped up A Discovery of Witches, Demons, and Vampires, which covers the second season of A Discovery of Witches show.
Yep. And you know what's interesting about that podcast? That podcast, which just wrapped up, and is now on hiatus for probably a year, because that's when the next season will come out. For Q1 of 2021, the Dark Discussions News Network had over 40,000 listeners of podcasts. And out of those 40,000 listens, around 5,000 of them were A Discovery of Witches, Demons, and Vampires. That's how popular that podcast was. It was like that's more than 10% of the entire listening audience was that one podcast. So it'll be curious to see how things shake up, because that was dominating the lists. If you look at the quarter for the top 10 podcast episodes were that podcast. And now that it will be off the charts for a year, it'll be interesting to see where all the other 30 or so podcasts fall now. So yeah, that is kind of cool. Mike, me, you, and Eric Webster, one of the co-hosts of the Dark Discussions podcast, are doing a side podcast.
Yeah, one of the side podcasts we do when we can squeeze it in, a semi-monthly schedule, is Cinema a la Carte, in which we discuss movies that are not horror films, but don't really fit safely under the Dark Discussions umbrella, but films that we would like to discuss anyway, personal favorites, or in films that we just find interesting. We just finished a discussion on the 1980 cult sci-fi classic Flash Gordon.
Cool.
Before that, we had done Inside Out, we had done Starlet, we had done Collateral, we had done Jack Reacher, Forbidden Planet. So, and there might be others that I'm forgetting. Baby Driver was another one. So it's kind of an eclectic mix, and we basically rotate and take turns, each picking a film we want to see. Phil picks the next film, so probably something involving Hot Little Dogs.
Indeed. All right, sounds good. So I guess we can give our final thoughts in this film here, Slacks, S-L-A-X-X. I guess I'll begin again. I wasn't a fan of the film. As we discussed it, though, you know, some of the things that were positive about it, unclouded my mind a little bit and make me appreciate it a little more. But generally, it's not a film that I enjoyed that much. It's a one and done. Had some good jokes here and there. But it had a lot of issues, as we discussed, too. Some people will probably love the film, which is fine. While other people will despise it, which is fine. But either way, I was not that big of a fan of the film. I can say I don't dislike it as much as I thought I did, but it still wasn't one of my favorites. Let's go for you, Mike.
Yeah, like, I had fun with it. As was said many, many times at this point, you are either going to enjoy it or you're not going to enjoy it. It is not by any means my favorite horror comedy that we've ever covered on here. You know, I certainly enjoyed a film like Zombievers much more. I don't know why that's the one I keep going to, probably because it's another one that's just so obviously silly from the title. But again, it's a movie about killer genes. You kind of know what you're getting in for when you watch it. So it's 77 minutes on Shudder, and if you're subscribed to Shudder, it's free. So I would recommend giving it a shot.
All right. Sounds good. Barrett.
Yeah, I don't think my opinion of the movie changed at all. I think the first 15 minutes is the best part of the movie. I really enjoyed the humor of that. I don't think the horror portion of it is very well implemented. I do really like the main actress that plays Libby. Romaine Dennis is her name. I thought she did a great job in her role. And other than that, I don't really have much to say other than, yeah, give it a watch once on Shudder. You might like it. You might hate it.
She was so short, too. She was like probably 4'12", there's no such thing as 4'12", 4'11", or something. She was wicked short.
She did seem pretty short, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Tiny people.
That's right.
In my jeans.
There you go. All right, so once again, that's a 2021 film, Slacks. The film was directed by Elza Kefart. She, along with Patricia Gomez, wrote the film. The stars, since we kind of named some of them, were Romaine Dennis played Libby, Brett Donahue played Craig, and some of the
behind the scenes stuff during the credits showed that he was having a blast playing the role, even though his character was so despicable. You could tell that in real life he was just a fun guy. Siha Bojani played Shruti. Kenny Wong played Lord. Tiana Nori played Bob Lebotsky. Jessica B. Hill played Hunter. Erica Anderson played Peyton Jules. Hanique Talbot played Gemma. And Stephen Bogart played Harold Lansgrove. And when I saw Stephen Bogart, I was like, I know that actor somewhere. I know him. Where the hell do I know him from? And I found out where it was. He was in American Psycho. He played the character that Bateman breaks down at the end to.
And he's in the Umbrella Academy, too.
Oh, is he?
Okay, yes. Yeah.
See, I hadn't seen that one. Makes sense that he's in that, because I'm thinking that's a lot of Canadian actors in that too, because Elliot Page is in that, and then this guy then you just mentioned, and so I'm thinking it's probably a lot of Canadians, probably was made in Canada. The film is available on Shudder, as Mike mentioned. It's getting really good reviews, like really good reviews. Again, not by a lot of main critics, but still 59 is a pretty good amount of critics, even if a lot of them are similar to Dark Discussions.
I think it's got 4 stars on Shudder, but you know, that's a Shudder audience.
Yeah, that's right, that's true. So it's getting good reviews, though the audience on Rotten Tomatoes gives it only around 60 or so. But either way, it's a film of note because of the title alone has given it a lot of buzz, and Shudder has pushed it a lot, like a lot of the new releases. So I guess with all that stated, Mike, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Well, thank you once again for listening to the Dark Discussions podcast. We hope you had a happy April Fool's Day, and we're not terribly frustrated by all the horribly misleading pranks that may have been publicized, like casting Henry Cavill as Wolverine. Tune in again next week, and we will be discussing something else.